There was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor, while the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string and makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings as the night folds in.
What that is?
On a rising tide, look beyond the shadows.
Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio broadcast. Eric the Freedom Screamer on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I could jump back in there for a second. I do believe we have a caller on the line. I don't want to make him wait too long. Brent, you're on the line. Brent, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. I've been wanting to call in for a long time and have just been putting it off. I'm so encouraged by what's been transpiring with the Bundys and those folks out there, and the fact that Ryan Bundy has gone in as a pro se.
Yep.
And seems to be having some movement in his direction. But I think we're fooling ourselves, and I don't mean to be a naysayer, but I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that the feds are going to just give up and and roll over.
No,
done
I
so
don't.
Much,
I don't think
done
we're.
So much
we're
to those
we're not expecting that now.
Okay,
we're not
that's good. They've done so much to those ranchers; they have to find them guilty of something. Now, I fought pro se with a group of people out here in the upper Midwest a number of years ago, back in the early 80s. And we were in a time before there were PCs and all this stuff. We had to go to the old dusty, stinky law libraries and dig through the volumes and try to make some kind of case. We were helping farmers fighting farm foreclosures out here, which were by the SCADs, you know. We had three counties on the border of northern Illinois and three counties in southern Wisconsin. And something I learned, very important, and it even holds whether you have a bar lawyer or whether you're pro se, you have to object. If you don't object to something in the trial court, you cannot address that issue in the appellate court. And the appellate court is where you're going to get your victory. But I've been in trials, most recently a couple of years ago. I wasn't involved in the trial, but I was just a court observer. And they had hired a bar lawyer, and he didn't object to anything. The judge would kick him in the butt, and he'd say, "Thank you, Your Honor," you know. And, geez, you got to object. You just got to object, because if you don't, you can't address any of those objections in an appeals court. And that's where you're going to find your victory. I used to object so much in court, if the judge passed wind, I'd object, you know. And same with the prosecutor, you know. If he said anything, I'd object. Well, geez, they got tired of hearing me objecting all the time. He said, "Well, what are you objecting to?" I said, "Well, I don't know, but I know I'm not getting a fair shake here, so I'm objecting to this whole mess,"
That's
you know.
Funny.
And, well, it was, but That's the way it is. And whether you have a bar lawyer or you're a pro se, if you don't object, you can't address an issue on the appellate level. So I'm sure you have much smarter people than me. You're all probably a lot sharper than myself. But I'm sure Chris from Las Vegas has had experience along that line.
Well, I'm sure he has, and I thank you for your call there, sir. Chris, you want to respond to that?
To support Brent, his observations,
yes.
That's the first thing I did was I object to everything and consent to nothing and challenge the jurisdiction squarely pursuant to Wheel and Pruden right out of the hat, and then I had the several objections after that to they're using commercial word terms to try to describe my private home conveyance, citing Lawwill versus Lawwill and UCC 9-109. However, there are two cases.
Again? I'm sorry. That must be referring to your Dodge Hemi.
Well, actually, this was that's one aspect, though. That wasn't that case. That was a traffic case where this vindictive, terrorist, rogue, defective detective Kenneth Meade and his gang of FBI and other co-conspirators have been violating everybody's rights, terrorizing federal witnesses, and just doing everything he can to harass, because he's been indicted on several Title 42, 1983 Bivens actions and RICO fraud and domestic terrorism complaints. In fact, he is a domestic terrorist, and he's acting as a so-called FBI anti-terrorism, but he's an Antifa, which is a terrorist masquerading as an anti-fascist, or a fascist masquerading as an anti-fascist terrorist working under the guise of the FBI, which RBN on the homepage has a really clear delineation showing that the FBI has notoriously been nothing but a crime operation and a racketeering mob operation for many years now.
That's great. Yeah, and they're all, and RICO is very potent. I mean, RICO was written for them, but really we can use it as well. I used to go into court under special and limited appearance and not a general appearance, and I'd tell them I claim all of my rights at all times and waive none of them at any time, knowingly or unknowingly. And, of course, when you're the only one that's ever done that, they sets their head spinning, you know.
But I think you'll appreciate this one, Brent, is I always preserve my rights, figuring being proactive is better than being reactive after the fact, trying to reserve my rights. And so I applaud that, and I certainly apply that. In fact, when you're appearing specially, the Benny S., without granting jurisdiction, but in fact not ceding jurisdiction, and challenging squarely jurisdiction on the record of the court because it hasn't been yet proven on the record, it doesn't exist, and that preserves it for appeal. And
sure.
If you don't mind me adding two more cases to your observation, that I was going to speak on the Bundy's behalf before we went to break. Eric talked about the Fordyce versus Seattle. There's also C versus Seattle, which incorporates the doctrine of corpus delicti, which is no victim, no crime. If you don't have a corpus delicti that's injured or damaged, then you cannot have a criminal prosecution. That appertains in my case. The other one that goes very, very well, the Bundy situation, where they were doing the remote surveillance via drones and other forms of telescopic-mounted antennas and cameras, that incorporates what's termed CATS versus cartilage, or U.S. versus CATS, K-A-T-Z, and basically anytime you're going to do surveillance of any form, you have to have a warrant substantiated by probable cause of an injured plaintiff that's neutral and independent, not an agent of the government, has financial, fiduciary, and other self-interest in the outcome of the issuance of the warrant, to be able to be competent to testify or be an affiant to get one.
Well, that's all very good. You know, a number of years ago, there was a drug bust. I don't remember where it was, somewhere in the country here. It went to the Supreme Court. The police were sitting across the street with a scanner listening to these drug dealers' cell phones, or not cell phones.
Right.
They didn't have cell phones, and it was their cordless phones. And they were picking up all their cordless conversation. And they wound up busting them and found them guilty, and they said, geez, you know, you didn't have a warrant. Well, the courts ruled that where you put something out across around the air like that, across the airwaves, you have the the you should
Nobody
have
tried.
The you should know that other people are listening to the conversations as well, so they couldn't claim a Fourth Amendment on that.
I'd say that was a political activist court's theory.
Absolutely.
Not based on any facts, relevant law whatsoever, no. Other than their own political opinions.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why they get around this stuff. They slime around it and lie and cheat and bite and kick. Well, we need to certainly keep praying for the Bundys, and I believe that's really the thing that's doing the most for them. And God bless you, folks. Keep up the good work.
Bless you. Thank you for your call, Brock.
Thank you. Good evening.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yes. Okay.
I thought I just heard him. Excelente. So Bryce was an excellent caller with excellent information and a great perspective on the true accuracy. Another thing that most people don't understand, you have to read their stuff to find this out, but the illusion of privileged communication to the bar is superseded by their oath and affirmation to the bar. As officers of the court, they have a higher duty and obligation and no obligation to their mere money-paying clients. Their obligation is to get the money by any means or schemes that they deem necessary, possible, or plausible, or lustfully satisfying, they also like to indulge in. And there is no privileged communication that they have an obligation, anything that's scandalous or embarrassing, to disclose to the court or keep it to themselves for their own prurient and predatory interest to hold over the so-called client, as we learned in the first edition presentation of the hit series Bull on TV, that he said the first rule is the client is the enemy, and I think more accurately it's the victim or the prey for the attorneys to take advantage of and rob, rape, pillage, or sexually abuse.
Oh yes, the funding source. I mean, we're the funding source. We're their prey. Yeah, it was right. It was Fordyce versus the City of Seattle, Ninth Circuit, 1995, 55F3D, that's Third District, 55 Federal 3, Third District, page 436 and 439. It's 55F3D, 436 and 439. Quote, the First Amendment protects the right of the public to record matters of public interest on public property. Boom, that's a Ninth Circuit case. That's a federal Ninth Circuit court that applies in the Gloria Navarro's court. She would, man, I hope the attorneys know this one. They don't, could somebody tell them?
Remember, Eric, these lawless agencies, the so-called headless fourth branch, which is really a extra governmental private foreign corporate for private profits association, are not within law, but they're without law. And they don't operate under law. They operate under private foreign corporate policies, procedures, statutes, and codes. And that's why they don't know what the law is, because they don't operate under the law as private corporations for private profits, just like the FBI, Department of Justice, who is paid by the UN and the World Bank, as a matter of fact, the Federal Reserve. That's why they're so conflicted over there. The FBI is the same way. It's an agency under United States Code 551 et sec, the Administrative Procedures Act. Colonel Edwin Mandel House, from his treatise, Philip Drew Administrator, who was the black hand behind Woodrow Wilson and FDR, who created that so-called headless fourth branch, not of government, but without government. And it got out of control for FDR, and they started ruling by agency rules, which are little private bureaucracies of their own little demigods set up where they try to pose themselves is having these super powers of regulatory influence over everybody within their sphere, but they like to broaden their sphere at every chance they get and get out of control and try to put everything under their purvey of their private corporate bylaws.
Yeah, no doubt. And by the way, how come InfoWars doesn't have a crew at the trial? They just can't the power hour like out. I wanted to touch on that. You brought that up last night, Chris, and I forgot to kind of go back to that because we were going into a break, and sometimes I get distracted and all that. But it was worthy of note that, because Chris mentioned last night, and I mean, no goodbye, no farewell, no sorry, but it didn't work out, no parting, not even a warning. I mean, it was done so covertly and in the dark and without. I mean, I wasn't listening like on a regular, steady basis because I was working in the mornings and whatnot. But Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was no like, and I don't expect a lot of fanfare when a show's getting a major show that has millions of listeners is getting
and is
like a part of history at this network, you know, over at GCN, the thing, and the Carrie Alex Jones and the Power Hour, the two big ones, and everything else kind of corporate shilling, but you know, and so was Alex Jones. I hate to say it a lot, but why is he not covering the Bundy trial? They were there at the cattle standoff. Why did they abandon the Bundys for the trial? They could be bringing so much attention because the Bundy standoff ranch with the cattle was under the Barry Saturo administration, masquerading as the Obama administration. Okay, the trial now that where the rubber meets the witch. Now it's time. It's under the Goldman Trump administration. We can't make Goldman Trump administration look bad. Don't say utter a word about Bundy. Oh, you know, I mean, they had a whimper here and a peep there over the months. I think 2 months ago I heard him mention. I mean, nothing this week with the pretrial release and the epic trial of the century. This is where it all comes down. All of our rights for everybody nationwide are affected by this trial, the outcome of it. It's insane what's going on. Never have I even seen so much criminal government activity in the witch's court. It's beyond the compare. This one is worthy of a giant, like, a book of over 1,000 pages of, you know, Hail to the Witch's Court. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
If I might enlighten the listeners, I, too, was very chagrined and remorseful that after Joyce Riley had that show for many, many years, and she did an immense amount of coverage of natural health cures and radiation, dirty radiation exposure, which she ultimately succumbed to from the Middle East, from serving over there as a nurse to the troops. So she had a very strong listening audience, and Sam and Dan, the People's Power Hour, I think they call it now, were doing a pretty good job over there. They weren't maybe Joyce, but they were very, very good replacements. And they were doing a great job, and they were giving good coverage to the Bundy situation because Daniel Brinkman, who wrote the book Forever 1776, had actually brought quite a bit of supplies out to the Bundy Ranch at his dime and expense, particularly, and donated them to the Patriots and the militias out there to support them. Now,
I forgot about the caller. Thanks for reminding me, Mike. Caller, just give us 1 second.
Let me finish this little bit here. The unfortunate thing about this, the replacement they have, although she's a wonderfully intellectual and medically aware and longevity-oriented promoter and does a very good job of delivering her message, the insertion of her into that time block, which out here starts at 5 a.m. in the morning and goes till about 7, is very disturbing. They've got a new woman
I tuned in this morning. She was talking about Fruit Loops. Did you know that bowl of Fruit Loops has 3.7 grams of sugar in it? Hours. Just that.
In fact,
it was garbage. Horrible. Yeah.
I sent an email to Dan and Sam pointing out that I was very discouraged because that had been a early morning news source access. Yes, they talked about health things, but they also interspersed it with some news. Now, this woman has said she would.
Let me give you my take on that. I think I took out of it that Joyce was way more political than she was. And rightfully so. And it was a good move to have the health and wellness thing be secondary to the freedom and tyranny thing.
Yeah.
Oh, with your health and wellness ain't going to mean Jack Dooley if the witches if they're forcing GMO food down your mouth and stealing family farms and blah, we'll run down the whole list. Okay, so no, political, I thought she was way more political and way more newsy and than she was, but augmenting it with an hour here, an hour there with the guests that we're talking about, you know, health concerns, which is important, but it's, look, the freedom thing. thing is first and foremost. Everything takes a backseat to the... Sorry, everything else is on hold except for immediate life concerns. To wake people up with this Bundy trial is a perfect example and a great way to do it. If nothing else, it's a vehicle and a mechanism to wake other people up. Some good can come out of this horrifying nightmare. And if I was these attorneys, I'd be given this Fordyce versus the City of Seattle Ninth Circuit federal court decision has to apply in Navarro's court, that these men have every right to film public interest on public property and move to dismiss immediately with prejudice so they don't reopen and re-prosecute. So,
you're exactly right.
So we're going to, well, before we forget, the fact that GCN canned the Power Hour, their biggest show other than Alex Jones, huge. The Power Hour apparently was the one paying the bills. They charged Joyce. She got paid nothing. They had to pay for their time. Alex gets paid by the network and has to pay nothing for his time. That's according to Douglas Dietrich. He could be wrong. If he is, correct me. But what he said, and he looked into it, was that Joyce paid a couple of $1,000s per show, apparently, and had to have the Power Hour Mall there to start hawking products to pay for it. And then Alex pays nothing for his airtime and draws a check. So Alex gets paid almost out of Joyce's thing. It was kind of how it was going. It was kind of weird. But, I mean, you know. So anyway, no goodbye. No, hey, we're going to get rid of the Power, but it was nice having you. No Vaseline, no nothing. Just goodbye and out the door. See ya.
Well, they're still doing a show on GCN, but it's later on the day at 3 o'clock in the Missouri time zone, I think it is. So it's probably 5 o'clock here. Tracking them down, and it's a different name. They adopted the Power Hour show for the same time block, same slot, but it's not the same show by any stretch of the imagination, and I think it was a psycho-political warfare tactic. They did talk about it for a few days before they did it. We knew it was coming, but it was a shock to our systems whenever our news source wasn't there. Now let's go see what the caller has to bring to us.
Sure.
Rhonda,
Missouri, you sweetheart. I love you for waiting. Thanks. What's up?
Yeah, I have a question for you guys, because Chris is like, I'm sitting here listening to you guys talking, and I'm curious as to, you know how when you're young, you kind of, well, sometimes it takes people longer to figure out what they want to do for a living, but were you guys thrust into this by, not by choice, or do you enjoy talking about law?
Both.
You know what I mean?
My answer is both.
Or
I was thrust into it.
Trouble with the law.
I was thrust into it, and I enjoy it now. So it's both. But yeah, I think
okay.
When I originally woke up when George Bush Sr. came to the podium at the United Nations and said, "Hey, it's a big idea. It's a new world order. It's a world of possibilities. Where there will be a new world order." I said, "Oh God, here we go." And then I kind of checked with a friend of mine, because I was a little naive at the time, and I said, was Bush talking about just, you know, a sense of order and peace in the world, or was he talking about, like, a specific new structural new world order, you know, with the, he always said, oh, no, I can assure you he was talking about specific new world order. And then I see Adolf Hitler in one of his World War II radio speeches. I know Hitler said, our brand of national socialism will give rise to a new world order. Like, what is Hitler and Bush doing using the exact same argument? And then Bush is the director of the CIA, and from all down the line, and then watching exactly how they implemented it over the last, well, you know, pick your amount of time. But in my life, it's been, you know, between basically, I mean, I was born a long time ago, but, you know, since I was a young adult in the 80s and forward until now, you've really seen the final pieces go into place. After Reagan, although he was a hardcore globalist in drag, he talked a great game. Reagan said some awesome things. Look what he did. Complete nightmare. Mm. DEA, asset forfeiture and seizure, normalizing relations with the Vatican, so now we have the vicar's office running all the witches' courts. That's how they get their hands on the kids. CPS dishes it to the witches' court. They appoint Catholic Charities, which is run by the vicar general, to examine the children. And then the money thing and the estates and the public administrator's office being Catholic University graduates and the whole smash, and then the Jesuit thing that Tom Lacovara was talking about, and I'm really glad he brought that up. People need to get it through their heads. The Jesuits have a stranglehold, and they've had it for hundreds of years, so they've managed to stay in positions of power where it hasn't changed. This is not an ebb and flow thing. very little. They really do. They have their people in the positions. Okay, so I went online and I got to get this at the perfect time to talk about this. I had a friend of mine who was pretty well connected, very close to some people who were right on the inside, and this person told me, "Hey, Eric, you know Ted Anderson's a Jesuit." I said, "Ted Anderson, the guy who owns GCN with Alex Jones and the Power Hour," and the person says, "Yeah, that same Ted Anderson." So I didn't know, really wasn't really familiar with the Jesuits at the time. I figured, well, maybe they were trained as a missionary, and then, you know, they kind of left to go into broadcasting, and they just, you know, changed their field of blah, blah. No, no. These people come in, they're in, they take the oath, they stay, they go off into their discipline, which could be in the media, it could be in government, it could be in the courts, it could be in the medical establishment. They're everywhere. The classic example, which really told me how pervasive and deep and broad the spectrum was across the media and the government together, was when, and I'll use the example again, I've mentioned this a couple times, I'll be brief, Peter King, the congressman Lori mentioned him the other night, he's the guy who's going to be in charge of the uranium investigation. Oh, great, we're going to get the word out there. Peter King came on Bill Bennett's Morning in America, the radio broadcast by Bill Bennett, who was the drug czar under Reagan. The great communist Ronald Reagan had a nice drug, was perfectly willing to have a czar to rule over the people and start initiating the drug war. So people like Shane Bennett, when they have guns later in life, if they have a minor drug charge, they're going to get their guns seized and taken. This is a drug war, and the door-kicking units that are stealing the guns are coming from the narco units. So the drug war is directly building the infrastructure and the legal superstructure for the gun confiscation. You don't, mark my words, don't doubt it, people. I've seen it happen. I mean, this is what I do, is watch this. So I have a passion for this. I knew by when George Bush gave his New World Order speech that what was going on. And I think the last straw was when I was, I was at a park 7:30 in the morning in a 400-acre wooded park, and some sheriff gave me a ticket for having my dog off the leash. And there wasn't a person to be seen. There wasn't a person to be seen for miles. So there was no complainant. It was just him cruising, hunting people, hunting at 7:30 in the morning. I got sick to my stomach when I went to court. The judge rocked back in his chair and stroked his chin and smiled and said, "Yeah, if you'd like to impede the witness, Mr. Eric, you can feel free." He wanted to be entertained in a sick way. The cop came from a police department that had just cleaned house and fired a bunch of guys, and I could have torn him apart with, "Why are you on administrative leave? Why did you leave the Greece Police Department? Were you in any way associated with Merritt Ron, who's the chief of the Greece Police Department, who's in prison now, along with four of his deputies? What did you have to do with that matter?" I could have really made it. I couldn't do it. It was not the godly thing to do. I just said, you know, let's just, okay. I didn't take a plea, but I ended up just making my case very brief and very to the point, because I saw that this judge, sick F-U-C, you know what, mentally, a psychopathic killer if he wasn't smart enough to put on the witch's robe and be an attorney, okay? So, and his name's Peter Lomenzo, Penfield, New York, and absolute evil. And a buddy of mine calls me and says, "Did you know they're running court every night, one night?" And this is a small suburban town, 170 people in traffic court, and they're running court every night, and they're even running court on Saturday morning when they know people aren't going to show up and they can issue the bench warrant. Okay, they're evil. Yeah, and this is what's going on in upstate New York. There's pedophile networks in Webster. There's evil witches court all throughout the entire upstate New York. The Masons are ingrained. Look into the Masonic murder of William Morgan.
I hear music.
And with that, we will go to a break. We'll be right back with you, Rhonda. Rhonda, hold tight. We got another caller, too, I think. But I wanted to get that out there. It's Eric the Freedom Screamer with everybody and anybody who's anybody. So is here tonight. We'll be right back after this break.
The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Oh, Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Try not to get worried, try not to turn on to problems that upset you out. Don't you know everything's all right? Yes, everything's fine, and we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by, so forget all about us tonight.
Everything's alright, yes, everything's alright, yes.
Sleep and I shall soothe you, calm you and anoint you. Melt all your hot forehead out, and you feel everything's
alright. Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Eric the Freedom Screamer on the Republic Broadcast Network, and there's a reason it's called the Republic Broadcasting Network, because we're not a democracy. Once again, for the new listeners, in a republic, the rights of an individual are protected paramount over, on top of, the boss man, over the collective. Better that 1,000 guilty people go free than one innocent person like Tom LaCavara or the Bundys go to prison. Once again, I'd like to encourage the attorneys for David Bundy, who was arrested for videotaping the BLM in the court of Mrs. Witch, Wicked Witch of the West, Gloria Navarro, falls into the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit court case from 1995 called Fordyce versus the City of Seattle should apply, and that says the First Amendment protects the right of the public to record matters of public interest on public property. The government was there trying to claim it was public property and not the Bundy's private property, so they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place on that one. And with that, I would like to get back to Rhonda. Then we have Dave in Massachusetts, and if we have time, I'm going to read a little more on neuro law, the most dangerous thing coming down the pike. It's why the Department of Education, Czar, Miss Czaress Betsy DeVos is the president of NeuroCorps, who owns the most advanced brain monitoring device in the world, the NeuroTOR, leased exclusively to the Israeli aircraft industries.
Okay.
With that, Rhonda, how are you, Rhonda? What were you saying?
Good. It's interesting how people end up finding themselves in this position. Mike Rivero talks about how he went after, you know, he said he was, you know his story, right? How he was in Hollywood doing his thing with movies, and then he found himself behind a microphone for RBN because he said you can't, there's no way that Vince Foster could commit suicide with two bullets to the head. But either way.
Yeah, no, and Mike has a conscience, and that, you know, well, so, you know, people who have a conscience tend to, you know, want to, you know, do more activism. I think it comes down to conscience.
But he wasn't
how much do you care?
It.
How much can you?
It
no, and there, neither was I. I mean, neither was I. I walked out
I know,
of the woods, and there was a guy with a gun standing there, handing me fines for, you know. Oh, by the way, on that doggy leash ticket thing, there was I'm doing the research. It was my kind of first one that I kind of looked into the law and doing the research, seeing what the penalty was, seeing what the courtroom procedure was, and just kind of just scratching the surface of this whole witch's court thing. And there was two, if the court wanted to, if Mr. Witch had an uncomfortable hemorrhoid that day, he could have sentenced me, and it said right in the statute, possibly 2 weeks in jail.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me. They would lock somebody in jail for 2 weeks. Now, with no victim, it didn't say dog fight or dog bite or people complained the dog jumped on them and scratched their white sweater or whatever. No, I mean, this was just, I mean, in the middle of the woods. And the one that really, the one that's really obscene was when the sheriff's mounted patrol comes down with the horses and walks the horses through the woods and starts writing people tickets, I mean, literally in the middle of the swamp where you couldn't go any farther to get away from civilization. Pretty remote area. You know, it's a 450-acre park. There's nice little spots, and it's right in a on the edge of, it's not in any city or anything. It's on the edges, you know, there's country all around. And so there's plenty of places to where, you know, but they won't let you get, I heard somebody say, you know, why do they do this? It's a matter of control. They're not going to let, I think it was Tom asking, Mr. Bundy on the interview previously tonight, just on this broadcast, you know, why? It's a matter of just, they're making a point that there is no private ownership of land and there is no private use of land. Everything is either rented from the government. If you think you own it, you don't. You rent it through taxes, or regulated, restricted, where you got to have permission to do anything and everything on your property. Take a pond up, put up a tree, take down a tree, put up a pole, take down this, that. You just cut a little road. What I mean, it's obscene what they regulate. Okay, and so it's a point. And look, everything is in. It's not, the land isn't owned by the state or the federal government. These are all in land trusts that are owned by the Vatican Bank and the Rothschilds. This is where this is. These are the controlling entities in the Crown of England, the royal families. They own the land trust that these go, because look, if our country has been foreclosed since 1933 and we've been owned by foreign banker entities, you have to realize they're laying claim and final, they're wrapping it up, dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and putting all the land in a completely off-limits situation. They hire a bunch of brainwashed fools out of the military who think the government can do no wrong. They lick boots all their life to the point where their tongue is raw, and they'll go out and kill people like the Bundys because they were ordered to do it, just like the Germans did in World War II. Well, that excuse is not going to work here on the RBN network, that's for sure. Rhonda, anything else before we move on to Dave?
Well, yeah, I'd like to hear how Chris got into the law thing, if he got into trouble. But first I want to just say,
Hold on. Go ahead, Rhonda, make your quick comment, okay. And then Chris will give you his answer we'll go to Dave.
I also wanted to say, did you hear John Stantmiller's program today? Because, like, he was saying, you know how Trump, like, made more public land in Utah or something, and he goes, why not Nevada?
Right. Why not everywhere else? Why just there? And it's, in other words, it's in one drop out of the Olympic swimming pool and saying you made a difference. Yeah, he's got a good point there. Why not everybody else?
Utah,
and
Nevada,
by the way,
that was his whole program.
Right.
Yeah.
A great point, Ron. I made that point last night. And by the way, the ownership of the land going from federal goons running it to the state goons running it, it doesn't give me any great hope. Anyway, I see the state police are far away, all the times worse than anybody from the federal government. I mean, horrible. So I don't see it. That doesn't seem like a big improvement. It's certainly not going back to the quote-unquote people of the state of Utah, although that's the scam they're trying to push with Orrin Hatch. Go ahead, Rhonda.
He just made the point, and it was a good question. Why Utah, not Nevada? I mean, maybe Utah doesn't have any uranium.
Well, and that's also something else comes to mind. Slap in the face. He did this on purpose. Why didn't he do Nevada and not Utah? The big situation right now to help the Patriots and show that he's a Patriot president and a guy who's really interested in Americana. And I don't mean Americana living in the golden towers as a New York billionaire and traveling the world going to fancy parties and drinking the finest champagne all the time. That's not Americana. Americana is the Bundys. Why didn't he do Nevada instead of Utah? Nevada is way more onerous on the land grab. Look what's going on. It would have been a great help to this case. It wouldn't have conflicted any. There would have been no ex parte. It would not have been improper in any way. It would have been great for his reputation. They're giving the people as little as possible. The Vatican Jesuits are sitting down going, all right, what can we give them to make it look like Trump's a patriot? And there's a little like, okay, build a few sections of wall. We know it's not going to work. It's not going anywhere. It's not going to make a difference anyway. Okay, that'll look good. And then we'll talk. We can cancel a trade deal here and there. Well, that one wasn't going to get approved anyway because the Congress is Republican. So anyway, so let's TPP. That's an easy one. Don't touch the Vickers. Don't touch the private property. Okay, so I want to know this. Why is that land that just got deeded back to the people, the quote-unquote, the corporation called the State of Utah, which is no different and not run by any different witches than the corporation of the state of the United States of America, so I don't see an improvement there. Do you think that land's going to go back to the people, quote-unquote people, anyway? You think anybody's going to get to homestead there? You think any chunks are going to get peeled off and sold for cheap, a couple hundred an acre so people can, do their prospecting or their living and build a cabin, whatever they want to do? Come on, no. It's going to be the state park instead of the federal park. Same. So anyway, Rhonda, we're going to go. Rhonda, I'm going to let you run. Okay, thank you, sweetheart.
Just want to know about Chris and how he got into it. Yeah, okay.
I will make sure we get a quick answer from Chris on how did you get into this? What spurred you? Was it a matter of just give us your kind of evolution into the freedom movement, Chris, in Las Vegas?
All right. Well, there's no activist like a victimized activist. There's nothing to stimulate the freedom and liberty movements like having your rights suppressed to light the fires and the brush fires of men who take up this torch of liberty. Myself, as a former multi-jurisdictional law enforcement professional protecting and serving, guarding and protecting against all enemies, foreign and domestic, for the 546 Military Police at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, attached to the Criminal Investigation Division, CID, then the Lawton, Oklahoma PD there outside the post. Then I came out to Las Vegas following my former wife and tried to get on and did eventually get on with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. They weren't paying any money back then. That was like 83, 85. And so I got an opportunity to go to work for the Nevada State Gaming Control Board Enforcement Division as an enforcement agent there, policing and protecting the games of Nevada to keep a honest shape for the customers as much as possible, and doubled my pay. But it was a very laissez-faire, see no, speak no, hear no, do no. So my affection for law enforcement had worn off somewhat. But I still had a strong idealism of right and wrong and protecting and serving people and not letting people be victimized by predators. And so I ended up building some property with my wife that I loved dearly, and we were married for almost 16 years before she abandoned me, betrayed me, fabricated false lies to help the police bring the blame on me before this thing happened. And down in Arizona, we had got set upon by zoning Nazis down there, the same people who were vexing me here, who had claimed that we had violated their statutes, codes, policies, and procedures by failing to take out a license license being a control mechanism to a privilege to do something that the natural law gives us the right, duty, and responsibility to do, to build our own homes on our private lands. And there was no nexus that gave them any interest in my property, and they tried to extort over $10,000 for my not taking out a license to get the permission of the king, the Lex Rex, the royal sovereign, to do what he thought I should do on his land, the alleged. They told me I couldn't even camp on 20 acres of land that I bought and paid cash for. So we went to court and battled them, and then we were all driving to the court one day in Yavapai, Arizona, where Prescott and Sedona is at, heard on the radio that we'd lost our case on our appeal, which we hadn't even gotten to yet, so it was a pre-concluded decision by the zone Nazis there and the county commissioners. Mr. Tom Thurman's still there. And we took it to the Court of Appeals down in Arizona and prevailed there sub silentio, below silence decision, under seal, because they don't want the truth getting out. We beat them on international law of treaties, private grants of land made patent, and doctrine of sovereign immunity, or not sovereign immunity, but diversity, constitutional diversity of citizenships, because although I own land there, I was not a living in Arizona at the time, and even though I am, may be in the near future, I still won't be an Arizona resident because it creates a virtual island inside of corporate states. They lie co-permanently inside of the geographic boundaries thereof, but not jurisdictionally external. So it's notwithstanding what's termed federal felony criminal jurisdictional implications exclusively, not statutes, codes, policies, and procedures. So everything beat them back in 2004 or so, and it was quiet down there up until I found a letter unmarked and unposted in my post office box in a plain white envelope, opened it up, and it was from the zoning commission down there, from a name that I recognize, the Mahan or Mahan name, which is a federal judge who had oppressed my rights and tried to steal my property on a Fifth Amendment takings of my common law lien interest in my home here, conspiring with attorneys that were not parties to the case whatsoever, but trespassers, to try to steal my house from me. I'm still involved in that one. But whenever I put that information and sent a letter to Tom Thurman pointing out that what they were doing was domestic terrorism, extortion, fraud, RICO, and so on and so forth, and I thought he was trying to give me another bite at the metaphorical apple, I found my windshield of my truck in my front driveway, which is a bit off the street, about 40, 50 feet, broken out, apparently to retaliate for sending Tom Thurman, the commissioner, a notification of res judicata and trying to relitigate it under the zoning protection without a warrant again. And apparently he chewed out Mr. Mahan's daughter or granddaughter down there, and she called daddy or granddaddy and complained about this mean old man in Las Vegas who sent a letter down there and got her in trouble because she had tried to enforce zoning regulations and tell me that I was in violation and they were going to abate, and it's the same old nonsense they did and extort money out of me again. I thought that was pretty interesting, until I had had my automobile stolen here, and then 30 days later they tried to fabricate a phony story that I was a felony criminal for guarding and defecting my castle doctrines, also stand your ground doctrine and the doctrine of self-defense, John Bad Elk versus Department of Indian Affairs, Bureau of Indian Affairs. And so that's how I got into this situation. When you become an activist and an advocate for true lawful governments instead of de facto criminal
governments. Yeah, you pay the price. Like, yep, they do. Yep. They make you suffer. And it really is. And you know, Jesus, you know, warned us that you will suffer if you try to do righteous things, stand for yourself. And Chris did it the right way and had some victories. And now, of course, they don't. I think a lot of this has to do with retaliation for you winning in earlier in other courts. And they always want to come back in more. Let's quickly go to Dave in Massachusetts real quick.
Yes, let's
get toward the end of the show. Dave, go ahead. Dave, we got a couple minutes left.
Okay, hey, how you looking? Hello, Chris. Good. Nice to hear a little bit of Chris's story there.
Thank you,
Eric, just with Stalin, his name was Dzhugashvili.
Yep.
Does that ring a bell? Joseph Dzhugashvili. He was from Georgia. So, you know, the other Georgia over in Asia, of course. But he changed his name to Stalin. That means steel. Stalin means steel, so Jugashvili. And Jew, it sounds like it starts D-H-U. Is, you know, and it's kind of pronounced, almost sounds like Jew, you know, Jugashvili. But anyway, because I know you were, you couldn't quite recollect his name, so
Stalin
maybe that rings a bell.
He was a Freemason. He's a Freemason, and that immediately, if you're a high-level Freemason, that ties you right in with the Zionist Illuminati banking establishment. They'll give you a position based on what they need you to do. And his was to be a mass murderer and bring worldwide communism to that area of the globe, and then have it metastasize here through people like, you know, we know the list. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, right. And you pointed out he was Jesuit trained also. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it was Tom that pointed that out. Too. Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, so anyway, I'm glad you brought that up, Dave. If I can interject right there, I want to get back to the Jesuit thing, because Tom Lacavara brought that up earlier in the show, and I want to give it some continuity and circle back to that. So hold where you are, Dave, in case you have any more comments. So I was told that Ted Anderson, the owner of GCN, was a Jesuit, and I kind of tucked that away in the back of my head. Didn't know much about the Jesuits at the time, even though I had attended a Jesuit high school. At the time, it was just a bunch of, it was very much a Nazi cesspool. It was run like a prison, but I think they were identifying those who would be worthy of being in the system, and that's kind of the early training grounds, but the real training gets done in the Jesuit colleges. But anyway, so I didn't know much about them other than the usual stuff. Well, they claim to be priests, and they're a bunch of drunks over at the high school, and, you know, that's pretty much all I noticed. Although there were some very interesting characters, I'll tell you about one of them later. He was in the movie The Exorcist, and he did the makeup, and he was the guy at the end who got out of the car. The priest that came at the very end of the movie that gets out of the car, that's the younger, after all the possession and the killing, the guy who gets Father William O'Malley. He passed away, but he was one of the Jesuit priests at the high school I went to, and he was an interesting guy. But so I tucked it away, and I said, all right, you know, I'll find out more about these Jesuits. And then I did the research and realized how pervasive, how many players in the world seen are Jesuit trained over the hundreds of years, how the Jesuits have had an influence in steering revolutions, manipulating markets, conquering small nations, putting dictators in place through communist takeovers that never really benefit the people. They just put the Jesuit, the Vatican preferred dictator, in power. They're the main and world's main intelligence arm. So I went online and I found an article. I think his name was William Garner. And he said and this is just hearsay, according to this man, he posted an article and he said he was offered a radio show on GCN by Ted Anderson and was all excited until Ted Anderson told him, you can't talk about the Jesuits. He said that was the last time I communicated with him. And then he got a call from Darren McBreen, another InfoWars guy. And apparently McBreen told him, you can't talk about the Jesuits. I'd like to do an interview with you, but you can't talk about the Jesuits. He said that's the last time I communicated with him. And so I'm like, wow, and after what I've heard, and so it's a lot of hearsay, you know, I can't prove anything. I don't have them admitting it, but I've never heard, they won't talk about the Jesuits, who are extremely, I mean, Peter King is going to be the head of the Uranium Investigation, Congressional Investigation Committee. He's going to decide if Hillary goes to prison or not. He's going to decide what happens to all the witnesses, like our friend Laz and Laurie Anderson's people that she's had on this broadcast. Are they going to go? They're going to walk right into the loving arms of the Jesuits when they go testify in front of Congress. Peter King's going to take it right back to Rome, okay? Because he's the guy who admitted he was a Jesuit on Bill Bennett's Morning in America. I'll never forget it. I heard him say it with his own lips. I heard it with my own ears. This is not interpretive. This is not, I heard it on the internet. This is not a YouTube video or something that was Photoshopped. He said it. He said, Bill, I know these arguments are difficult to make, but we have to use our Jesuit skills to do it. I almost fell out of my bed. It was about 6:30 in the morning on Bill Bennett's Morning in America. I couldn't believe it. I thought I was dreaming. Definitely wasn't. I was listening to the radio. Local station here, AM 1040, was running Bill Bennett's Morning in America for 3 hours. Nice globalist pig every morning telling you how great the war is and the great the drug war is and how great GMO food is and, you know, how the military-industrial complex is awesome and, you know, the CIA should be torturing people and they make the government bigger and
It's just an absolute absurd, you know, and then tell you, you know, taxes should be lower and he's against abortion. And that's how you suck in all the Christians and false conservatives. Okay, great. You got him on a couple issues. Throw him a few crumbs, a few bones. I'm not saying the abortion thing is not important. It's extremely, it's the most important thing. Murdering of children, yeah, you can make the case that supersedes everything. And that's fine. I got Delphi'd one night by someone who came on and tried to shut down the jury nullification information I was sharing, Hagman and Hagman. And they had me on one night. They had a huge response after my first appearance. Came on a second time, and they called me a couple hours before the show, and they said, Eric, there's a guy named Greg Johnson who wants to come on the show with you. I'm like, all right, well, why does he want to come on the show with me? Can he do his own thing, and I'll do my thing? And all right. And they said, oh, he talks about the doctrine of the lesser magistrate and judicial corruption. I said, oh, great. Sounds like kind of right up my alley. The guy came on and immediately started talking about abortion, which is fine, and I conceded that that is a very important issue. But they blindsided me, and it was very interesting that they used that very important issue, which I am definitely against the killing of any babies at all. I mean, it's horrible with 50 million babies. It's an atrocity.
Murdering babies.
And they never had me on again. It was very obvious that they didn't. The jury nullification thing is the Achilles heel of the system, and I thought it was very suspicious that they had this guy come on. They had to know what he was going to do. Nobody stopped him and said, hey, well, we're here to talk about jury nullification in the witch's court. Because, by the way, it's the witch's court that approved the abortion thing in Roe v. Wade, and that's why all the sheriffs think that they can have an abortion clinic in their county, because it's legal. Until we take back the witch's court, you can forget about all the other stuff that's going on. It's important, but you're not going to fix it until we take back the witch's court, the land rights, the abortion, the child protective stuff, the money thing. It all comes down to the elections that are close. All comes into the witch's court. Dave, any more comments before we close out the show?
Oh, yeah, just I didn't know I was still on, but yeah, I know. Eric, did you check out, you know, when I mentioned Old Harry, the nickname for the devil, you tied it in with Prince Harry, which is true. But what I had in mind was that old devil, Old Harry Reid, you know, vis-a-vis the Bundys. And what's interesting, not only is the devil's nickname Old Harry, but then the word to harry means to be devil, to be devil someone, or to harass someone. For example, I could give you the example like the British troops, the British regulars that marched out to Concord to confiscate the guns of the colonial militia. That they were harried by the colonial militia all the way back
right,
to Boston.
Right, right. Interesting word. Yes, it very shows you how words can have many multiple yeah. meanings. My favorite one is the ISIS. When I looked up in my American Heritage Dictionary, there it was, ISIS. Two definitions: an ISIS one and an ISIS two, separated in just written like ISIS, capital I, small s, I s, and there it said, an Egyptian fertility goddess. And brother and sister of both, sister and wife of Osiris, and Oxford. See Oxford. I looked over to, they call Oxford in the Thames ISIS in England. Get it? That's where all the MI6 grants come from. That's why ISIS means Israeli Secret Intelligence Services. We'll play that clip tomorrow. Gotta run. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Mike on the board, Gary, Chris, all the callers. Thank Tom LaCavara. Thank you, John Stat Miller. We'll be back tomorrow night at Derek the Freedom Screamer. Hang in there. Don't forget, the enemy is running both political parties, and Donald Caesar works for one of those two political corporations. See you tomorrow on the RBN Network.